Hey everyone, Raven here. Today, on Plant Save My Life, we're joined by Dr. Leia Johnson. Leia is a trained medical cannabis pharmacist and the owner and founder of Alchemist Consulting, LLC. She's an accomplished, highly driven, clinical integrative health pharmacist with a primary focus in pain, mental health, and geriatric medicine management. Dr. Leia works one-on-one with cannabis patients or through their healthcare proxy to initiate or adjust their medical cannabis therapy for multiple ailments including autism spectrum disorder, anxiety, insomnia, pain, cancer, and then also the process of weaning off medications. Today, we'll be discussing how most patients are given too many and often inappropriate prescription medications while not being given the knowledge for utilizing effective herbals and supplements in order to reduce pill burden. So join me as we welcome Dr. Leia Johnson to the show. Also, a quick disclaimer, while I make every effort to broadcast correct information, I myself am still learning. I promise to double-check all my facts, but I realize that plant medicine is a constantly changing science and art. So the views and opinions expressed on this show are intended purely for educational and informative purposes. No topics are intended to be construed as medical advice. Well, Dr. Leia, thank you so much for joining me today on Plant Save My Life. I mean, I know you very well, but I'd love for you to introduce yourself to the listeners.
Sure thing. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. My name is Dr. Leia Johnson. I'm a clinical medical cannabis pharmacist, and I work one-on-one with patients. I've actually started plant-based therapy research and development back after undergrad, a long time ago, and moved on to pharmacy, and then really saw the niche between the two of why you need both, you know, knowledge about pharmaceuticals and knowledge about plant-based things. And I noticed some patients do better on plants, some do better on pharmaceuticals, some do better with a combination. So it really meant a lot to me. And I actually started in cannabis, working with patients in long-term care facilities, which is also known as elderly homes. I wanted to switch some of the more harmful medications that were being recommended for patients for either combativeness, aggression, or even just sleep and insomnia and appetite stimulation. I was sick of seeing a lot of these antidepressants used off-label. And it's like, if a patient doesn't have depression, if they don't have psychosis, we shouldn't be using an antidepressant. We shouldn't be using an antipsychotic. And, you know, with this knowledge and my past knowledge of knowing herbal therapy, I started working with the doctors to get people off of side medications with side effects that have the wanted effect, and switch them to something like Marinol. Because sadly, in long-term care, because it is federally monitored, they cannot have cannabis, since cannabis is not plant-based cannabis because it's not FDA regulated, but because Marinol is, they can have that. So so at first, sadly, the doctor wanted me to only work with hospice patients because they figure they were going to pass away anyway. Not a bad area to try it with, sadly. And I was disappointed, but you know, I knew that it was going to be okay. So I just went with it. And a good amount of my hospice patients graduated, is what they called it, off of hospice. And graduating means when they're reassessed, they are deemed to have more than 6 months to live.
Wow.
So these patients were already documented to only have about 6 months left. And these patients, most of the ones we replaced was specifically for appetite stimulation. We replaced it with Marinol twice a day, low dose, 2.5 milligrams of Marinol, which is even less than about 2.5 milligrams of THC, but technically less since it's a synthetic. And on that low of a dose twice a day, half hour before breakfast and half hour before dinner, they started eating, but there was so much more that came from it. They ate. After they ate, they got stronger. After they got stronger, they wanted to get up more. They had less anxiety. They had less pain from whatever. There are many different ailments. And the reason they were graduating off hospice is because they were functioning again. They were not 6 months to live. They were like, you know, they reduced pain, reduced anxiety. And so this was amazing. And then after about a year, trying to see the outcomes, the doctor finally let me start working with patients not on hospice, and specifically more of the combative patients. And we saw the same thing. Their anxiety level went down, their stress level went down, and due to that, they weren't fighting the nurses and the healthcare professionals to get medication. So then they were getting even better on their ailments because now they were taking their medications. So all in all, we were just seeing great results. And then shortly afterwards, I had actually moved on to my own practice. And now I see patients one-on-one throughout the United States. I don't go past the country only because as a pharmacist, I'm only licensed to be a pharmacist in this country of Cal in the country of California, in the country of the US. So I only work with US-based patients, but and I always try to make sure that if I'm working with a patient, if they're at a state that only allows medical patients, I make sure that they get their card from a valid, a reputable location. And then I work with them because sadly, most of the places that will give you a rec or a medical card still know nothing about cannabis. So it's crazy that I can't give recs because I'm a pharmacist, but Joe Schmo, doctor, MD over there can give a rec and have no idea if cannabis is even right for a patient. So, but either way, I make sure they get their rec. And I've worked with patients of all ages, young and old, for many different ailments, from autism to cancer symptoms, cancer chemo symptoms, to anxiety, and just base, and even weaning off people off epileptic drugs. So just the gamut, and it's really been awesome to see how much benefit, because at this point, the patients that come to me are usually the ones that say, I'm done. I've tried everything. The thing that my doctor's recommending to me now, I'm just not okay with it. And, or the doctor says they don't know what to do. So I'm here with you because this is my last effort. And I really wish the message I would send to people out there is don't wait. So don't make cannabis your last ditch effort. Try to see, if you've taken a couple of pharmaceuticals and it's not working for you, try it. Because as long as you're working with a healthcare professional that understands cannabis, they'll make sure that, they'll make sure to check your dose, make sure the drug interactions, they'll check all that for you to make sure you'll be okay. And, it's my patients have done swimmingly on it. I mean, the worst that has happened is for one patient, it wasn't as effective as they would have liked, but the patient also had phantom pain, which means that they had amputations on their toes due to diabetes. So phantom pain, and you can ask any healthcare professional will say it, phantom pain's tough even with pharmaceuticals. So cannabis also was very tough, but he still did get benefit from it. And we were able to get him to be able to sleep through the night and get him less pain than he had before him and I had worked together. But still, there was still breakthrough at times at night. And, and the topical THC that he was using was actually quite effective for him. So all in all, there's really no downside for the of at least reaching out to a healthcare professional about utilizing cannabis, even before you've tried all pharmaceutical options, because there's a lot less side effects a lot of times with cannabis medicines than there are with pharmaceuticals. And it's always good to try something that's more natural that the body can handle and kind of recognizes, as opposed to a pharmaceutical, which are only isolates.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And honestly, I think it's beautiful that you're able to he was able to give you the hospice wing to be able to work with, but you graduated so many patients out of the hospice wing that he had to take you seriously at that point.
Yes.
He had to recognize cannabis as medicine. And that's beautiful. And I think what you said about not waiting until it's a last ditch effort, that resonates so strongly with me. I hope that that's a big message that comes through even with this podcast, is that there's a lot of patients who wait until it's like the last final straw. They're already taking a handful of medication a day and stuff. And of course, there is a medical disclaimer in the beginning of the show, just so you know.
Yeah.
But I always think it's a good idea. Maybe just like see what's out there. Talk with a qualified medical professional that understands cannabis.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I really like that you work in conjunction with doctors in order to make sure the patient's receiving full relief. And I'd like to hear a little bit more about weaning off medications, especially ones that are like notoriously difficult to wean off of. For instance, like anti-anxiety medications, anti-epilepsy medications, etc.
So everybody works a little different in the cannabis space. As a pharmacist in general, like most pharmacists, even non-cannabis pharmacists will say, I don't like meds. And I will also agree, I am not a pharmaceutical fan. I absolutely 100% see their importance. I 150% absolutely use pharmaceuticals if needed. But I think that it is just so important to, to not necessarily go that way. So for one of my patients, and again, I work a little differently. So I start low, go slow, and stay low. That I always stick with that mantra. And a lot of people have that same mantra. Some people do a little differently. But again, I like to keep cannabis as low as possible, just like I like to keep pharmaceuticals as low as possible for dosage. So what I usually do is I always add cannabis before I start removing off other meds. So, and it's because the whole point is usually they come to me because it's not just simply I want to reduce off of this. It's usually because of side effects or issues or other things they're having. So, or just not having enough control, which I had recently for my patient who had autism and epilepsy. So what I do first is I slowly add. And then once I add and I make sure that the patient can tolerate the dose, they're feeling fine on it. And just simply just, I'll give them I'll mention when to take the dose, either right, either at bedtime. So we check in the next morning or in the morning, check in, depending on which cannabinoid profile we're focusing on. And if they have other ailments as well. So if they have insomnia, then along with wanting to wean off pills, we'll do it at night. If it's epilepsy, it's better during the day. So we have a little bit of an idea. So we start the cannabis therapy. And then once they're at a level that they feel like they can tolerate, and as long as they've been stable, I always say it's, and this kind of goes with pharmaceuticals too. They always say before trying to wean off of a any medication, but especially epilepsy meds, you want to be stable without any seizures for like at least a year. That's usually like good practice just to go from that. Not everybody goes with that, especially if the medication could potentially be harmful, but that's just the idea. So with one of my patients, she was hadn't had a seizure for many, many years, had been on epileptic meds for over 20 years, and she wanted to be weaned down. And so she was started on CBD, broad spec, full spectrum. So a little bit of THC, CBD has some CBG, some CBC as well in it, and but mostly CBD dominant. And she was taking it once in the morning. And I'm sorry, she was taking. Yeah, she was taking it, sorry, twice in the day. She was taking it 25 in the morning, 25 at night, for milligrams of CBD along in the tincture. And once she felt good and stable, we were, I was working, she worked with her neurologist, and we first weaned it just oh so small. So the lowest dose you can get of, she was on Dilantin, which is phenytoin, and the lowest dose you can, the lowest dose on of Dilantin you can get is 50 milligrams. So we had her fill 50 milligrams so that way she could utilize the 50 when we do our dose reduction. So she had actually been on 300 milligrams every like and 400 every other day, switching back and forth, which is a very high dose. So we said, okay, so she on her own, working with the neurologist before we worked together, brought it down to 300 daily. So that was at least a good starting place. So when we started working together, once she was tolerating the CBD, she was on it, she was feeling great, said she felt awesome. I said, okay, so the first thing we're going to do is cut it. So some people rush into cutting it in half and getting rid of it altogether. It's like, no, your body, the biggest thing that I find that practitioners or providers do too often is they reduce drugs way too fast. It's not just that you need to see if the body can handle the lower drug. You also want to make sure that the body learns to adapt. And so if you were to just take her off the dose, she'd probably have a seizure. If you slowly reduce the dose and see how she does, as long as she doesn't have seizures, give that a month. So what we would do is we went from 300 to 250. And she was doing 250 every night. We did that for a month. No seizures, no negative activity. She was feeling great. Next month, we dropped it down to 200, and we just kept doing that every month until she was fully weaned off. So her body had a good month to restabilize on the lower dose, make sure that it upregulated any receptors on its own that it needed to make sure that it didn't trigger a seizure, and she did phenomenal. So, you know, that she was totally off. So now she is completely off of her Dilantin medication, which she had been on for tw over 20 years, that her not neurologist actually said to her. So she had two doctors. The neurologist wasn't a huge fan. Her primary care, though, was totally fine with us using cannabis. So I always say it's great to have all doctors on board, but make sure to have, like, there needs to be a doctor on board. And the reason is because I can give the cannabis knowledge, but I can't write the prescriptions at the lower doses, and I can't, you know, and I at the same time I can't monitor the patients for vitals and stuff like that the way their provider can. So that's the importance right there, is just to make sure that they're being tracked. So he wanted, so his her neurologist actually said, "I'm not really comfortable with cannabis therapy. I'd like you to come in. We're going to do a 24-hour thing where we take you off all, we'll just take you off your medication for a full 24 hours and then see if it, and then see when the seizure hits." And as a pharmacist, I'm like, "Wait, why would you trigger a seizure? That's not healthy for the patient. That's not good for the patient. If we can do this safely and get her off the med without triggering anything." And it's funny. So when she was at 50 milligrams nightly, so her very last dose reduction for the Dilantin, her doctor goes, she goes to her doctor. Okay, well, she calls her doctor and goes, "Oh, you know, I know I'm coming in for the follow-up. You know, you had asked for an update, just to let you know, I'm now only taking 50 milligrams of Dilantin. It's going really great, da 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 da, you know, and I'm really excited. I don't think I'll need to be taking Dilantin anymore." And his response to her was, "I don't think that cannabis is a good product for you." This is after she's already weaned down from 300 milligrams a night to 50 milligrams a night, and she was about to wean off fully, and he said it wouldn't be a good idea for her. And so she goes, "I understand, but it's really going well, and I am almost fully off. So I would like to continue my course." And he goes, "Okay." And then when she checked her next to follow-up appointment, he had booked her with the nurse practitioner, even though he had seen her every single visit for 20 years. And because he knows that she's using cannabis, he wants to switch her to another practitioner, another provider. And I just thought that was hilarious, because I'm just like, and now obviously she no longer sees that neurologist because she no longer has to worry about her epilepsy. So I just think that he might have, I understand, and I think it's really like, it's a, there was another, my autism patient, same thing. It's, you know, because he had the opposite. Instead of trying to wean him off, he, the doctor wanted to cut into his brain to get rid of his epilepsy. And the mom came to me saying, "My child is a 9-year-old child with autism and epilepsy, and the doctor wants to cut into his brain. Let's try cannabis first." And I'm like, "Yes, let's definitely do that."
Anything before we cut into the
Yeah.
brain.
And he had tried every single epileptic med, every single everything. Nothing was working for him. He was on, and then I, and then he started, and then he was titrated up very slowly to 0.25, so a quarter of a milligram, not a milligram, a quarter of a milligram of THC and 10 milligrams of CBD. No seizures, was doing great, happy, helpful child. Now, you know, mom goes from, "Oh my God, I don't know what to do about his epilepsy and I don't know what to do with him," because she was just so overwhelmed, to, "Oh my God, this child is a joy to be around." Like, and just, and so just in general, it's interesting how this was two neurologists in a row now that were anti-cannabis. And even when the cannabis was started to show the benefit, that both neurologists, even so, for my 9-year-old patient, the neurologist goes, "Oh, it's probably just the steroids that, you know, I know they only usually lasted six weeks, and I know that we're already at 10 weeks, but it's probably a delayed effect from the steroids." It's like, so for the many, many, many months that you've used steroids and it only lasted a max of 6 weeks, and you had to give another dose before, or a seizure would be triggered. Now all of a sudden, the only thing that's changed is cannabis. And you're gonna say it's the steroid lasting longer. That's, especially since the cannabis was started after the steroid. So it's a little weird, but you know, I know what it is. And I'm like, okay, well, the providers can think what they will, as long as there is a provider working with them that's willing to work with them with can that's willing for them to be on cannabis. I'm just going to keep going about trying to help them. And these other providers will eventually come. Well, I mean, after months and months and months of no steroids, this provider obviously is going to be very clear that there's no way the steroid is still working from a year ago. It's obviously the cannabis that's helping this child.
Exactly. And I respect what you're doing out there because, I mean, if you were just relying on his neurologist, I mean, there's an opportunity there that the stigma might get in the way of them receiving the health care that they actually deserve. So it's nice to know that you're out there making sure they explore other options before we cut into a child's brain.
Yeah, it was just terrifying. And that's what I'm saying. I mean, a lot, pretty much all my patients are, I'm at my wit's end. I'm either almost dead from cancer, or I'm almost, not to be so brash about it. Wow. But I'm like, you know, I'm end stage, you know, I'm on hospice due to cancer. I have, you know, the doctor wants to cut into my child's brain. I've tried everything for anxiety, and literally I'm going to do, you know, shock therapy at this point if I can't get rid of it. It's like all of these patients come to me at their wit's end. And it's kind of like, I am so happy to help you at this point. However, since you've waited so long, we don't know what's going to happen. If the people who had, you know, who are terminal because of cancer, if they had come before they were terminal, maybe they wouldn't be terminal. And I don't know. I can't say because every patient's different, but I always really encourage, you know, if you've tried something, or if you say to yourself, I don't want certain things in my body, then try cannabis. And if it doesn't work, so in my mindset, the way I would like to see healthcare work, and I understand a lot of providers are not okay with it, but I was an herbalist before I was a pharmacist. So I have both my pharmacist, I both have my drug expert hat on, but I also have my herbalist research and development hat on. And the way I see it is that why not use whole plant therapy first? And I'm not just talking cannabis. I am talking traditional Chinese remedies. I'm talking, plant, like any plant-based therapies. Let's try the ones that those first. Once we've tried those, if they're not working, then let's move on to medications. So, you know, there are so many meds out there that help people with dementia. So, and they're not good. They're not effective for the most part. So there's ginkgo biloba. Now, I understand I'm not saying that's going to fix people's dementia by any means, but ginkgo biloba does increase your attention to detail, and it increases your memory as it increases the blood flow to your brain. So as you're eating, which is, you know, you're eating food, it causes glucose to go in your body, and the ginkgo biloba will kind of shuttle the glucose to the brain better. And by having pretty much when you're thinking and when you're studying and when you're learning and memorizing things or remembering things, you need to fuel your brain. So you need to get the glucose there. And this allows that system to work better. So do that first. And then that wasn't enough, then look for medications that help with memory. But there's no reason to try not to try these herbals first, as long as you are. And again, I will say as a caveat, though, herbals, in my opinion, should come first, but with the assistance of an educated healthcare professional. And the reason is because even medications, including herbal medications that I find safe, are not necessarily always right for people. I have patients who have gone into dispensaries in California where it's 100% rec, so anybody can get anything at any time from California. And my patients have gone in. The bud tenders often don't have the education about how to properly work with patients, because they're legally not allowed to give health medical advice. But at the same time, they should have some knowledge about what to do with cannabis naive patients that don't want to get the euphoria. They don't want the high from the drug. They want just the benefit. And, you know, right now in California, you know, I've had patients go in, say, I need something for sleep, and they get a 5 milligram gummy. And for those of you that don't know, 5 milligrams of THC is actually a very high dose for some people, especially those who have never used cannabis. I actually usually don't recommend to start on anything higher than either 0.5 to, which is a half a milligram of THC, to about 1 milligram of THC. For those who are specifically medicinal patients, not looking for euphoria or the high, they're just looking for the health benefit. And, so that's why I think it's important to make sure that even though to start with plant-based therapy first, work with somebody who understands plant-based therapy on a medical level, pharmacist, a nurse, a physician, a nurse practitioner, PA, anybody who has proper training in cannabis therapy, and you work with them so that they can help guide you to, okay, cannabis might be right for you, but let's make sure you don't go on too high of a dose. Let's stay low. Raise it only slowly, increase the dose slowly and stay on the lowest dose that's effective for the patient.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it sounds to me like you've really developed your protocols for treating a lot of different ailments like autism spectrum disorder, anxiety, insomnia, you mentioned cancer, epilepsy. And I'm curious as to what it's like to work with so many patients with different types of ailments.
So it's definitely a little interesting, especially, and it's less interesting to work with. It's less confusing to work with patients with a myriad of health, like with different types of health ailments, than it is even to work with patients with the same health ailment. And the reason I say that is because I have had multiple patients with autism at this point. There is not a one that has been on the same regimen. And that's the one thing I always try to explain to people is that it doesn't matter if you present identically as another patient. You need to get rid, and that's why it's like when people go, oh yeah, I know that you always say that it's specific, patient specific, but just tell me what you would start with. And I'm like, depends on the patient, depends on their past cannabis usage, depends on so many things, depends on if they're potentially going to get tested by the government or by their job for THC use, but depends if they're on a state that's rec or medicinal or neither. Like, there's so many different things. And I mean, yes, I would almost, not always, but I would normally usually lean towards a CBD dominant with THC, with lower THC. And I will say that to anybody too, when it comes to inhalation of cannabis, or even cannabis products that people are like higher THC percent, highest THC percent, don't go, never, ever, 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 ever look at the THC percent. That is the worst way to pick a medication. If you are in, a flower user for medicine, or even if you're a flower user, I mean, even if for rec, to be honest, and you use flower or you use concentrate, the most important thing I always, especially flower, usually though, I always try to explain the importance is really the terpene profile. Look at that terpene profile. If it's not listed, or if it doesn't, like, again, and I always say smell the flowers, like go out, smell the flowers, especially for the rec users. If it does not smell, I mean, I know not all states do that, but for the states you can smell, please smell it, look at it. And if you don't get, if you get a, oh, this smells like cannabis versus, ooh, this smells like orangey. Oh, this smells like pine. Oh, this smells like fruity. This smells like, oh, this smells kind of strange, kind of like sour, that's what you're looking for. And that means that the terpenes, because what I found is that I have seen patients use both rec, but some of my patients are also rec. So I've had patients, go to the dispensary, go for the highest THC, say that it always affects them the same. And then I say, okay, this time don't look at the THC percent at all. And luckily, these are obviously in states where they can do this. I go, smell it and choose the strain, or I hate using the word strain because it's not really strains, but choose the chemovar or the chemotype that smells the best to you. And what I've learned and what I found, well, not learned, but what I found from these patients is that once I ask them, okay, now that you've done that, what's your THC percentage? And they're saying, oh, I ended up choosing like a 19%. I never choose that low. And it's like, well, that's because if the THC percent goes up, the plant could be no more than 100%.
Exactly. You're losing something.
Exactly. So if you're at 19 and you raise it to 30, which there's still questions on if we can leak if that's legitimate, but let's say we could raise it to 30. Well, we're missing cannabinoid profiles of the other cannabinoids and the other polyphenols and the terpenes. They're all going to have to decrease to get your THC higher. And that balance, that natural cannabis balance that cannabis has had for so many years before we started tinkering with it, like, is very, very supportive of those terpenes to work synergistically, or the entourage effect, as we like to say, with the mixed cannabinoid profile along with the terpenes and the polyphenols for health benefit. And we really need that together. And so what's funny is not only did they say that the one that they picked that smelled the best had less percentage, I asked them after a couple times utilizing it for their therapy, how did you feel after using it? And they're like, it was totally different. They're like, I didn't just feel high. I felt like they're like, I did, they're like, I did still feel high, but I they're like, but the problem was is I kept feeling high, but my back still hurt. And a lot of the patients actually that usually are rec who are looking for medicinal end up actually being pain patients often. And they said, I kept getting high, but my back still hurt. And it's like now I can get the euphoria that you know that they would like to, you know, which is their own journey for them. But more importantly, they're getting the medical benefit they're looking for, which is the pain relief, which was improved with the better structural profile of the cannabinoid of the chemovar they chose.
Yeah, exactly. I always say that not only does the nose know, additionally to that, one of the beautiful things about cannabis is it actually makes a student out of all of us. And one of the big lessons that it teaches us is the importance of keeping it as a whole plant, all the terpenes that
Yes.
come with it, the entourage effect, and how you're really getting the most beneficial medicinal effects from keeping it as a whole plant form.
Absolutely. And I always encourage patients if there are patients I've had that have either been in states where they were fearful of the even the 0.3% THC with from the hemp. And so there are patients that we that I have had to go broad spectrum just for their own safety, just to make sure. But I always say if you're not going to do full spectrum, at least do broad spectrum. At the bare minimum, do broad spectrum. Because, and I'm sure your viewers know, but for those that don't know, broad spectrum is pretty much full spectrum, which means just like you said, it's the full extract from the plant. It's all the cannabinoids, all the terpenes, all the poly, everything. And it's all everything, but broad spectrum is everything minus the THC. It's just that's extracted out afterwards. So I still am a huge supporter of even if THC is in a microdose amount, like literally it doesn't even read as milligrams, it reads as micrograms based on the profile because the THC is so low. I still find it to be very beneficial just to be there because, again, they work. They have an entourage effect. They work synergistically together. Every little cannabinoid working with each other. The reason why the plant is alive and survives is because it's figured out how to work together. So now it's also figured out how to work together.
Yeah, absolutely. I also wanted to ask, what kind of ailments or patients would you not recommend cannabis for?
Sure. So any patient that has a family history of schizophrenia, I would definitely question that. It doesn't even mean it's a no. At this point, what we have seen is for those who are predisposed to schizophrenia, that cannabis does have the potential of initiating the schizophrenic behavior about 4 to 6 years earlier than what they would have seen. Not saying that it causes schizophrenia or that it causes psychological issues, just that if you will eventually, if you're a patient that will end up developing schizophrenia in their life, that utilizing cannabis could trigger that 4 to 6 years ahead. So it's not, I never say anything is a necessarily 100% no. I mean, obviously, if they have cannabis use if disorder or cannabis hyperemesis syndrome, which means they've already tried cannabis, obviously, it's not something I would recommend. But for those that haven't tried cannabis, the ones I'd be more cautious are definitely the ones with bipolar or schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder, but there have actually been patients with these conditions that have actually done quite well on it. So depending on the dose, depending on the, because it's not necessarily, because a lot of times they've shown that THC often is what's, and again, studies are still out, so we're still like, you know, very slowly getting the studies to verify these things. But for example, like I have a family member who does have schizoaffective disorder, and he does actually utilize cannabis. He uses it inhaled because not only does he have schizoaffective disorder, which I don't personally think it's helping with that, but he does use pharmaceuticals for it, but he also has a gamut of social anxiety and social health issues as well. So he has Tourette's, he's got OCD, he's got ADD, he's got ADHD, he's got everything. So it's not that I think it's helping. It's for him specifically, it is not hurting his schizoaffective disorder. I also don't think it's treating it, but it's not hurting it. But it is helping him and treating him for his other ailments, which he does not have to take medication for. So his antipsychotic is helpful with that one, with his psychosis, but he doesn't need to take an anti-anxiety. He doesn't need to take, you know, an ADHD medication. He doesn't need to take all these other a depression medication on top of, you know, the psychotic. He just needs to take just the antipsychotic, and then the cannabis gets rid of the rest of them. Same thing. There have been patients with bipolar who have used it and said it is very effective at keeping them level. But again, these are two conditions I specifically would be very hesitant about just because they do have the potential of triggering these ailments. So it's just something I always am very cautious about. But, you know, really, we don't really know yet. And so, you know, it all comes down to what their doctor thinks. And if their doctor says, you know, I think it'd be okay to try a very low dose and see what happens, then I'm completely on board and I'm happy to work with the patient. If their provider really is adamant and they don't have a provider that is comfortable utilizing it for those specific ailments, then I would usually lean on the same thing, on the same lines. There's also about four medications, maybe five, that have been proven to interact with cannabis. And those five, again, it doesn't again mean that it's no different than medications that interact with each other that are all pharmaceuticals. You usually would see if you could separate the dose, you know, maybe give one at night, give the other in the morning, maybe give one, you know, maybe if one is with food, it would change how it's absorbed. So, like for example, I had a patient that was on clobazam, which is an anti-seizure medication, and he had refractory seizures anyway, so not like the clobazam was, you know, doing everything. And with the utilization of the cannabis, it did raise the clobazam levels a little bit, but to the level of, but it instead of raising the amount of medication the patient was taking, so instead of increasing the amount of clobazam the patient was taking, it just increased the levels of the active metabolite in the body. So that way, exactly. So it was more effective for the patient, but without adding more drug. So it actually did benefit. And then again, they were refractory. So they were still having seizures, even with the clobazam. And with the combination of the CBD dominant therapy and the clobazam, it actually stopped the seizures. So it kept them under control. So it's important to, like, again, and this is again why it's so important to work with a healthcare professional that understands this stuff. Because as a pharmacist, I mean, and mind you, I also always, if I have any question, I always check with other cannabis pharmacists or cannabis healthcare professionals because it's so important. And it's a community that I think is slowly learning to work with each other because until proper research is out there, and double blind is very hard to do with cannabis based tinctures or orals that were made from the plant as opposed to isolates that are really not the best for you. So it's really good to have somebody that understands these so they can say, okay, these might interact. Due to that, let's reduce the dose of this. Let's monitor this. Let's check your blood levels for this. Let's check your liver enzymes for this, so on and so forth. So that's really, so, you know, even with clobazam, I was at first like, let's think about this. And then the more that I worked with, you know, discussed with other colleagues and with the patient, we found out that it was ac and I in studies, of course. I mean, there were actually studies that showed for people with refractory seizure epilepsy that the addition of CBD does increase, you know, is actually beneficial with the increase of the clobazam, which is great.
Wow, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned treating adolescents and children with autism. How is it treating children and adolescents? Because there's a lot of concerns and kind of misconceptions whenever it comes to that. So I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Definitely. So the biggest issue is the studies that have come out that show that adolescents that have used cannabis have reduced either re reduced IQ or reduced knowledge level re or reduced ability to do things. But a lot of most of these studies are based off of adolescents who are rec users. They're not adolescents who are using a dose that is very low just to treat their ailment. So that's thing one. Thing two is that there's actually been studies that have shown that patients with autism are actually deficient in their endocannabinoids. So it kind of actually makes sense to utilize cannabis therapy with them. And I kind of see it as kind of like, I always kind of, I hate, sounds weird, but I kind of always relate it to insulin and the idea that some people make no insulin. And some people only, and some people make minimal or bad insulin. So no insulin type one, incorrect or minimal insulin type two. And so with, I mean, obviously that's a bit of a generalized oversight, but I mean, over, you know, overview, but that's okay. So the same thing, there are some autistic patients that make no THC, and there are some autistic patients that make minimal to incorrect THC. So by utilizing, and again, it depends on the patient. So the patients that, and we don't know. I mean, there's no really good way of saying, you know, can't really test for these right now. So the best thing to do is start, is I usually start with CBD therapy with minimal THC, and I see the response. If the patient is, sometimes if the patient is very, hard to explain, you can, based on the therapy, you can tell what they're missing, is I guess what I'm trying to say. So at first, this, so if they're, if they have enough, if they're making some of their natural endocannabinoids, what you'll find is that the T that CBD is, at least from my experience, CBD has been a little bit more beneficial because it helps the binding of the natural endocannabinoids. It allows them to bind better, make sure that they function better. So it pretty much enhances. So kind of the same thing of like when you have a type 2 diabetic, when they're on a pill that enhances the body's production of insulin. But some of my patients, you know, you could, they, you know, CBD is helpful, but they definitely need something else. And what you find is that they're more likely highly deficient in the THC. And in other words, they're not making their anandamide or their 2-AG, and their anandamide is anandamide is our version pretty much of our THC. It's our natural endocannabinoid that is structurally similar to THC. So if they're not making any anandamide, then you can see, then you'll see some benefits with CBD, but you'll also kind of notice that it's not really there. And as, and so if you push this THC a little bit, you'll, and you see benefit, you can tell that that is what the child was missing. It goes the opposite way too. If they do need more THC therapy, but it's causing too many side effects. And again, we start low and go slow, but it could simply be slightly tired in the morning, maybe slightly tired during the day. Then it's not like it's hurting them, but it means that the dose is too high. And if we reduce the THC dose and the benefit goes down, we need to do something to work that out. So a lot of times what we'll change to is instead of changing it, instead of utilizing more or less THC, we might switch it out for THCA, which isn't the same thing. It does, it is the acid form of it. It's the, they call it the non-active form, but truthfully, the cannabinoid acids are actually also beneficial for health. So if THC is too sedating, and you can't get the THC at a high enough level for the benefit that's needed because the higher dose is causing the issue, you can always supplement with the THCA, which you won't get the psychoactive effects, but you will, or you won't get the psychotropic effects, but you will get the benefits for the THCA. So that's an option. If CBD is too stimulating, which it has been for some of my patients, CBG is a really great switch too to help them with that, or CBDA. So with children, it's it also is very difficult depending on what type of autism the child has too. And if they have comorbidities. So it's obviously a lot more difficult if the patient is nonverbal, as it's, you can go by, obviously you usually work with the parent or caregiver at that point. But the problem is that even the patient or even the caregiver or parent might not be able to tell how it's affecting them. Like maybe their behavior is a little better, but it's not like they can easily tell if the child is sleepy. Like, you know, obviously if the child's walking around and their head is down and they like, you know, they're looking like a zombie, of course the parent could tell something's different. But if they kind of yawn a couple more times, you know, it might not seem something that's odd. It might have been like, oh, it could have been the same response if they maybe didn't sleep well. But if they could verbalize the response, they might say, oh yeah, like I'm dragging now because I'm just so exhausted. And so that's what it does make it a little bit more difficult. So it is a little harder with dealing with like dealing with the family members or the caregiver to give you that info because they can only do so much to understand what the patient's going through because they can't get the response from the patient. So the patients who are able to at least give some indication of how it's going is really helpful. And then also, you know, again, one patient to the next, even, I mean, I have one patient I have is very, again, they have different levels now. I don't know what level he was recently diagnosed with actually, because he's had, obviously he's had autism for a while, but you know, he's what we, you know, what was originally referred to as low functioning. Now I believe it's, I think it's stage 3 or 4, and he is actually on a similar medication to my very young patient who has, you know, who is verbal and has epilepsy. So it's like both have autism. They're both on similar doses, but one is 9, one is 19, you know, one is, you know, verbal, one's not, one is, you know, and one is epilepsy, one doesn't. So they're very different, you know. They're very different from each other, but their doses are very similar. And then I have two patients who are both what would be considered high functioning. I think they both would be considered stage 1. So they're both verbal. They're just they but and mostly a lot of those patients usually have issues with behavioral issues, mostly due to anger, anxiety, and fear. And the funny thing is, those two had almost an identical presentation. Really, the only difference was the age by about 1 year, and one was male, one was female, but their doses were completely different, just completely night and day, just different. So it really goes to show that it's, we're treating the patient. And that's when I, when patients, when practitioners start coming to me to ask questions about what's it like working with a patient, such so and so forth, I always explain it's kind of like going all the way back in the day to when those doctors had those black medicine bags and they would show up to your house saying, what's wrong? And all they have with them to fix you is what's in their bag, and that's all they got. So it's like that. And so there's no more of this, use this medication, let me know if you have issues, otherwise I'll see you in 3 months to check on you. There's no mu there's none of that. You can't do that with cannabis therapy or plant-based therapy because little changes are often needed. And it's important to know if you, if a patient doesn't do well with their first dose, why keep them on that dose for the whole time? Find out what's wrong, find out what the issue is, and make slight adjustments about every 48 to 72 hours, you know, at max. You know, I wouldn't change more. I would give it at least 2 days on a dose to see if it's, I mean, unless it's obviously causing severe issues. And then obviously we would then want to stop and reevaluate. And that's the biggest thing I would say to practitioners who come to me who are curious about working with patients is we're treating the, this is the first type of medicine in maybe 100 years where we're focusing on the patient,
Yeah,
not the ailment.
exactly.
I don't care what they have at all. What are you feeling like? Okay, based off of this, based off of your meds, based off of your past reactions to things, based on your metabolism, because that's the other thing people forget. If you're a slow metabolizer and CBD is you is energizing to you, if you take CBD in the morning, you're going to be up all night. Because it's not going to kick in until halfway through the day. And there are people who are absolutely slow enough metabolizers where it takes hours for it to kick in. And then they're up all night with it. And they're like, I can't sleep. So my one patient, which is interesting, she takes her CBD tincture, which causes her a lot of energy. The second she's starting to be like, oh, okay, I'm exhausted, I'm about to put my head down, I'm gonna fall asleep, that's when she takes the CBD so that it doesn't kick in until like halfway through the night, if not later, so she can sleep. And then the next morning, she's feeling the energy from it because, it's taken that long. So I always focus on the patient and the patient's response. And that's why there's no such thing as what dose do you start with? What cannabinoid do you start with? It depends on the patient. And then once I start it with the patient, I might literally give a recommendation and then the next week, completely different therapy. And that's just because how they responded to the initial recommendation.
I like what you said regarding taking a patient-centric approach, and it's really interesting to think about autism and the fact that it could be an imbalance, that it could also be linked to imbalances with endocannabinoids. That's really interesting to me. And just a fun fact for our listeners, how you mentioned anandamide, the endocannabinoid. I love that it's the Sanskrit word for bliss, ananda. I think that's absolutely beautiful. I love that.
Yeah, it just brings the happiness, and that's important because a lot of times what causes the anger and the combativeness is because simply they're just lacking it. And if you think about it, how many of us get angry and get snippy and just say, oh, it's because I'm stressed. Well, is it because you're stressed or is it because your endocannabinoid system signaling is off? And if you fix the signaling, you might also fix the stress. And I know a lot of patients who were just, would just, you say one, you have people like, I hope you don't mind. I'm like, what do you want? And it's like, okay, well, on the outside, they don't look like they have any issues besides being angry. And at the end of the day, a lot of those types of patients might come to me because they just are like, I'm gonna have to be put on something serious because I'm always angry. I'm just gonna strangle somebody. And it's like, okay, let's try this. And it's amazing how many people go, oh, it's just because they're high. It's like, no, not one of my patients are high, at least if they're, unless they're rec users, which has nothing to do with my work with my patients. It is specifically the focus on not the high, but focusing on the effect. So they shouldn't be high. They should just feel better. And so if you see somebody and you go, oh God, if Joan comes and talks to me one more time, I swear to God, I'm just going to throw the phone at them. Think to yourself, is it worth it to just let your body try to handle your stress by itself? Or could you potentially fix your endocannabinoid signaling so that way, instead of your body going angry, 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 it goes, I'm a little annoyed by this. I'm angry about this. And then your body goes, okay. Then it sends happy receptors throughout the body saying, we get that you're angry. You don't need to keep telling us. And then your body downregulates the receptors. So you're not screaming in anger. You might just be a little bit frustrated, but be able to physically and emotionally handle it better than you would have been without the addition of the therapy. And what people don't understand is the reason why cannabis works is due to our endocannabinoid system. And the reason we need it is because often it's because of a dysfunction. So often there are patients who have just said, oh, I've heard cannabis is good for me. I'm going to take it. And they've tried a reputable product and they go, and they try it at a level that, they figured, would be medicinal, not euphoric. And they go, eh, I don't really feel much different. It's probably because their endocannabinoid system is in balance. And that's all we're trying to do is, as we get older, through toxins in the toxins in the world and stress levels and physical damage, mental damage, all the stuff, alcohol and all the other fun stuff we throw into our bodies, we damage our endocannabinoid system. And it is the one system that makes all the communication for all the other systems work. So if it's dysfunctional, it would make sense why, okay, I'm in pain. Well, why am I feeling like I can't, why is my pain excruciating? Because your signals are telling your body too much that it's in pain. I'm stressed out. Why do I feel like I want to kill people? Because your signaling is too high. It's not balanced. And if we get it balanced, you won't be doing that. My blood pressure keeps going up and down, and it's through the roof sometimes and it plummets. I don't know what to, again, it's, and that's why you can't really go based on the ailment. You have to go based on the patient and their response, because a small nothing dose might do wonders for a patient, and for somebody else, it might do absolutely nothing. So we need to treat the patient and what is their endocannabinoid system dysfunction and not their ailment that is being affected by the endocannabinoid dysfunction.
Yeah, exactly. You talked a little bit earlier about the FDA-approved pharmaceutical forms of cannabinoids like Epidiolex and Marinol. I'd love to hear your thoughts on those.
So I'm happy that they exist, in the idea that for federal patients, so for those in long, you know, those that are being managed by Medicare, Medicaid, those types of things, and those who are federally, the thing that bothers me is I think they could be utilized more. I would 100%, hands down, choose plant-based therapy, full spectrum therapy than these two. As I mentioned before, both Epidiolex and Marinol are isolates. Marinol is the exact same structure as THC, but it's synthetic. But it is the exact same structure as THC, just a synthetic form, and an isolate of the THC synthetic. And Epidiolex is actually taken from plants, but again, it is also isolated to just the CBD. And what we have found in plant-based therapy in general, but specifically also with cannabinoids, is, you know, when you take a product, when you take 2.5 milligrams of THC, let's say in a tincture that has, that is a full spectrum, has a bunch of other cannabinoids as well, you don't get the same side effects that you do with Marinol, which is also 2.5 milligrams of THC or synthetic THC. But it's not the synthetic that's really the issue. It's really the isolate. It's the same thing with Epidiolex. You know, as we isolate things, and the reason why is because, as we said before, the plant has an entourage effect that works synergistically together. And if you think about it, the plant, just like we make our own antibody, you know, antibodies, we make our own things to protect us. Every plant makes things to protect them from, you know, getting eaten by other species or from viruses or fungus. And cannabis has polyphenols, which are their antifungal, antibacterial, and antiviral properties, fungal, bacteria, and viral. And it protects them against viruses, funguses, and bacteria. So when we ingest that, it protects us also. And the balance of the cannabinoids helps to balance as well. So for example, and this is actually a great example with vitamins. Doctors will always say, and I 100% agree, pharmacists agree, nurses agree, it is much better to get your vitamins through a natural source. Always get it through the natural source. If you need vitamin C, eat an orange. Yeah, you can absolutely take a vitamin C pill, but it's your body doesn't recognize the natural the way it recognizes that. And also it works together, the orange that you eat is more than just the vitamin C. It's also the other benefits it has with it. So it's no different with cannabis or really any plant-based medicine. Is everything balances everything. And what we've even found is that high doses of CBD, and I'm not saying that this is a cure for taking too much THC, maybe in the future, but for right now it's not, but high doses of CBD will actually displace the THC from the receptor. So pretty much if you're, if you've just taken straight THC isolate, you might feel that. And CBD actually doesn't bind to the CB receptors from what we know in regular to low doses, but in high doses, it will. So it's either going to shove the THC off the receptor, so you're not feeling it anymore, or it will sit on the receptor and block, preventing more THC from binding. So either way, it actually prevents you from getting too high, you know, technically. So, I mean, and not that people haven't, it is absolutely possible to get too high. Definitely, you know, definitely probably a conversation for another time, but definitely possible. But and too high to the idea of that you're uncomfortable due to the level of euphoria. But the whole point is the combination. So with the isolates, we've seen more side effects. So with Epidiolex, we're seeing a lot of issues with increase in liver function. And more so than just an isolate causing more problem and not having the other parts to protect it, the other parts also make it work better. So in other words, if you have CBD and then you have THC, they kind of boost each other's effect in the body as well. They work again, entourage effect, they work synergistically together, which means you need less THC and less CBD to get the same benefit as you would if you just had one or the other. So that's the other problem as well. With Epidiolex, it's an isolate of CBD. So could it be effect like very effective for seizures at much lower doses? Absolutely. But because it's an isolate, they have to keep escalating the dose because it doesn't have its helper buddies to make it work better. So it kind of has to work by itself. So it's like, okay, we have to give it more then to make it, since it's got no help. So it's just the same thing. If you're working by yourself, you might need an extra couple cups of coffee to keep you going through the day because no one's there to help you. You've got all these buddies helping you. You probably don't need a chemical boost because you've got help. And it's just the same way with cannabis. When you've got the other buddies, the other cannabinoids, terpenes, polyphenols helping, you don't really need a higher dose. You just need the helping dose. So, less side effects usually with plant-based medicine compared to the isolate. So, I still think they're very important. I still think that while we're still in this really weird gray area of federally illegal, state-wise legal, and all this mess, I think it's good to have them. I really personally think more providers should utilize them for off-label utilization. And pretty much, if you're a provider, you can often get away with using anything off label. So, as many drugs are. So to utilize these two, what's to say that you can't utilize CBD with THC? And by that, I mean, utilize Marinol with Epidiolex. Why not use the two together? Use 2.5 milligrams of Marinol with meals. And then let's say, again, I'm not giving dosing. I don't know the patient in this made up scenario, but let's say we give 20 milligrams of Epidiolex, so that's a way lower dose than you usually see on this, for patients. But the benefit of the two isolates together would be more beneficial than, and still isolates still will have, it's still an isolate. They still have their own problems, but at least utilizing it together, you have the potential of being able to use less of each than having to use, so much of one. So I think they're good in the idea that it's good to have them. I wish more providers would utilize them off label for anxiety, for depression, and instead of these really harmful, and potentially, mind, negatively mind altering drugs. And they say cannabis is a mind altering drug. Well, so is an antidepressant. So is an insomnia med. They alter the mind to work better. So why not utilize Epidiolex and Marinol for the same reasons and the percentages that you're finding in the formulations? That way, it's FDA legal. You've done nothing wrong. You're just using a product. You're just trying a product off label. And the patient, would potentially get more benefit than these other pharmaceuticals. But my goal is to hopefully, or my hope is to see more of a, more of a relaxing of the federal focus and more of a focus where the plant-based medicine is considered to be, okay to use federally, so that way patients can get the full entourage effect over the isolates. But again, I'm still on the idea that something is better than nothing, and at least by having them FDA approved, then we pretty much can yell at the FDA and say, if there are two drugs that are from cannabis, cannabis cannot be Schedule One because cannabis has medicinal properties. End of story. And it was actually, amazingly enough, I don't know if you've seen this, but in the news, I posted it on LinkedIn, which is pretty much where I post most of my stuff. There was a, and now mind you, this is obviously going to probably get overturned and whatnot, but there was a judge in Nevada who said that since their state of Nevada deemed cannabis to be medicinal, since they have people getting medical cards, it can't legally in the state of Nevada also be considered a Schedule One. Now, as we know, Schedule One is a federal thing. It's not a state-based thing. So it's that silly gray area, but it's great that this one judge started legal precedents now that this is the first movement, and that's what we just need. We need all states to have these types of things saying, well, we can't say it's not medicinal. We can't say that it's Schedule One either, because we also say it's, you know, that it could be used medically, and so on and so forth. So I'm kind of hoping that that's what happens, that we get to a point where patients can utilize plant-based medical cannabis and be and have the benefit from it, and, you know, to allow so people can, you know, practice with cannabis. And that, and more importantly, and the, actually the biggest reason I want it to be fixed, and I don't want to say schedule or reschedule because that's its own problem, but the reason I want it to be that for patients to have the access to it legally is because then it will enforce, it will help to enforce insurance companies to pay for it. And a lot of what I find in my patients is a lot of them say to me, you know what, this therapy is amazing, but based on the dose I have to take to feel better, I can't afford it. And luckily in California, we have compassion programs, but it with compassion programs, you know, if a 40 to one tincture is working, you know, 40 times more CBD than THC, if that's working great for you, but your compassion box only has gummies, and you're kind of SOL, and you kind of have to be like, how do I make this work? So the compassion organizations such as Black Canna Joy in California, Dear Cannabis in California, and many others, they're amazing, and they're so helpful for patients that need the access that can't afford it. But if we just could get insurance companies, and not that I want to get rid of any of these, you know, because even if insurance companies covered it, they probably still need compassion programs. But for those that, you know, are on high doses based on their ailment, especially a lot of cancer patients take very high doses to actually fight the cancer. And it would be great if insurance would say, oh, your doctor or your healthcare provider or professional that you're working with cannabis, you know, documented that you're using these levels of your product. You're using, one full syringe of RSO a day. And I mean, that could be up to 800, 900 milligrams of THC, depending on the product, you know, and if they could get that covered, that would be huge for the patients, because, you know, you shouldn't have to decide between a medication that doesn't work because insurance pays for it, and a medication that works amazingly, but it's too expensive to afford. You should never be put in that position. So I would like to get to the point where the government will pay for medical cannabis medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I mean, I think that's a huge hurdle in making sure that the medicine really gets to the patients that absolutely need it. Now, I want to be mindful of your time, Leia, but I would love to ask if you have any parting advice for listeners that are curious about utilizing plant medicine or cannabis in their own household or in their own medical healing journey.
Absolutely. So I'm a pharmacist, so I like to, I'm always going to give the good with the bad. So let's just do the bad first, just to get that out of the way. For those who are utilizing cannabis, make sure that you, especially if you have children in the house, and especially if you're going to be using anything oral inhaled, we rarely have to deal with children, luckily. But in general, and this goes for medication, not cannabis. This goes for medication. Protect your children from medication. They shouldn't have access to any medication, including cannabis medication, unless they're a patient that is being followed by a practitioner, a cannabis practitioner, for their benefit. But you know, it's always good to make sure it's stored in a locked container. It's on a high shelf where they can't reach anything, to keep medication in general, but also plant-based medication, especially if it's an edible, which might get confusing to the child, away from children. So that's just first warning. Second, make sure you work with a healthcare professional. And a lot of people say, it's wreck in my state. I can just go in, who cares, whatever. Yeah, you can. You could also have a really bad experience doing it that way. You also can incorrectly tell yourself, this isn't right for me, when it could seriously have just been the dose that was the problem, or the timing of the dose, or the interaction with a medication you didn't realize. So number one thing is obviously watch your kids. But also for meds, make sure that you work with a healthcare professional that is trained in cannabis. Make sure they have that they've gone through a certification or training program. Make sure they're a healthcare professional. Make sure they understand meds in general and not just cannabis. They need to understand everything because it's so important, because interactions absolutely exist. Even interactions with food with cannabis exists. So be careful with that too, because if you have a high fatty food one night, let's say you had a bunch of guacamole one night, so you've got that nice healthy fats that you've eaten along with your cannabis, and the next day you have, let's say you have, a salad. Well, your absorption that day one is going to be completely different than day two, and your response to the cannabinoid therapy is going to be different because the absorption to the body is going to be different. So again, you need to work with a healthcare professional to make sure you're using it right. There's no side effects. And if there's issues, you have somebody to figure out what those issues are coming from and not just guessing at them. If you're going to use, if you don't heed my advice and you do it on your own, or if you know somebody that might try to do it on their own, number one thing, especially use the lowest THC possible, even if that means cutting your dose in half. As I mentioned before, do not recommend starting for cannabis naive patients, for those who have never utilized cannabis, or for those who might've said, oh, well, I used cannabis back in the day when I was in my 20s, which was about 80 years ago. Don't utilize, make sure that you're utilizing it with somebody who knows who they're talking about. And if they're not, low doses. So for those out there who might use a gummy or an edible before, without talking to a healthcare professional, again, do not recommend that. But, or if you have a friend that you can't convince otherwise, explain to them, start with 0.5 milligrams, so a half of a milligram of THC to 1 milligram of THC. And I wouldn't go past that 1 milligram until the patient knows how they feel. And if they say, oh my God, that call you listened to was crazy, I did 1 milligram, felt absolutely nothing, great. That's actually great. Because if they felt nothing on the 1 milligram, that means it wasn't too much for them. And that means they can take more the next time. Go for 2 the next time. Still don't feel anything, go for 3 the next time. That's fine. And slowly work your dose up until you feel the benefit you need. But never start more than about a half to one. And the reason is because I have had many patients where 0.5 milligrams of THC was plenty. And they even said, honestly, I'm a little sleepy the next morning. And I'm shocked because I'm like, you took it in the night, it's been over 8 hours and you're slightly sleepy. And it was 0.5, a half of a milligram of THC. So it's just mind blowing, but it can happen. And especially if you're slightly older, older. Usually I say for people ages 65 and older, just because that's the happy age that we've deemed as an older adult. Just be careful. Equilibrium decreases after 65 and actually technically earlier. So just watch yourself. And if you know, okay, well, you're most likely, if you're somebody who drinks alcohol, you're most likely drinking less alcohol with age because again, you don't want to be unstable. It's the same thing with cannabis. Start low. Go slow, stay low, and always work with a medical cannabis expert who's also a healthcare professional.
Awesome. Yeah, well said. Well said. Well, thank you, Dr. Leah, for kind of bringing the pharmacist perspective and some real medical cannabis science to the podcast. I'm really honored to host you today.
Oh, I was thrilled to be here. Yep. And if you need anything else, definitely let me know. I'd be happy to impart any other information that any of the viewers might be interested in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're open to it, I'd love to bring you back for a part 2 at some point. I still have lots of questions for you, but it's getting late over here. All right. That's all we have for this week, everyone. You can find Dr. Leah Johnson on LinkedIn, located down in the show notes. And if you have any specific questions about medical cannabis, feel free to let us know. Thank you so much for listening. As always, if you'd like this episode, please feel free to send it off to someone who you know would enjoy it. We'd also be eternally grateful if you were to rate us 5 stars and follow us wherever it is you get your podcasts. And for questions, comments, and community, head over to our official Instagram at plantsavemylife.pod. Until next time, everyone, have a beautiful week.